that countries and peoples understand that a policy based on exclusivity of anyone, on the suppression of other cultures and peoples, is inherently criminal, that we must turn this shameful page. The collapse of Western hegemony that has begun is irreversible. And I repeat again, it will not be the same as before.
Our country is taking back its historical lands that our grandfathers defended. I am inspired that I caught and I am a participant of this moment. These territories and our people were artificially divided.
The West, led by the United States, has been supplying all kinds of weapons to Ukraine, sending large numbers of mercenaries to the country, and imposing huge economic sanctions against Russia. But it has failed to stop Moscow's special military operation in Ukraine. And for the Donbas, Zaporozhye and Kherson regions, which have been fighting for their right to become part of Russia, the accession means, first of all, security and sustainable economic development for them.
The right and decision of the four regions to join Russia is undoubtedly a historical moment. Moscow says strikes by Ukraine on those territories joining Russia today will be seen as an act of aggression against the state. It has vowed to protect the territories at all cost after their accession to Russia. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
A recent report by the Pentagon says 12 civilians were killed in drone strikes during 2021 in Afghanistan. Two were killed in separate airstrikes in Herat and Kandahar, and 10 members of a family in a drone operation in Kabul just before the U.S. withdrawal. Although General McKenzie admitted that the incident was a mistake, but none of the U.S. military forces went on trial for this attack. The report also compares the number of casualties in 2021 and 2020. It shows there is a decrease, but those aren't the only years the U.S. was present in Afghanistan. The United States came to Afghanistan in 2001 and left the country in 2021. Armed drones were used by the U.S. military from the beginning. Still, there is no mention of the overall number of casualties in the report.
In recent years, the U.S. and the Taliban were negotiating and agreed that the U.S. reduces drone attacks, and that is why we witnessed a decrease in casualties during these two wars. This does not mean the Americans value human rights or have reduced errors and miscalculations in their operations. Drawing a comparison between these two years can't simply be a positive point for the Pentagon.
The exact number of casualties during the 20 years of the U.S. occupation of Afghanistan is unknown, but the statistics show a 330% increase in the figure since 2017, when the U.S. military relaxed its rules of engagement for airstrikes in Afghanistan. Another source estimates more than 1,000 civilians have lost their lives in air raids, but that only includes the death toll from 2015 to 2020, which accounts for only 5 years of the U.S. presence. The survivors of U.S. attacks never received proper compensation, and no American troops were duly tried for their wrongdoings in Afghanistan. The reason, as stated most of the time, was that the investigations never found any violation of the law. Abdullah Amirzadeh, Kabul.
The moment when, via live link from a neighboring room, the Electoral Committee of Donetsk People's Republic announced to the press their intention to join Russia.
Colleagues, on the question raised for the referendum, do you support Donetsk People's Republic entering the Russian Federation by the rights of its subject is considered to be confirmed? I ask you to sign the protocol. It's a historical signature. I congratulate you.
These are historical days now. We are reuniting with our big motherland, Great Russia. Now we can breathe out, take a break for half a day, and continue creating, building, and repairing. But now we are not going to do it alone. Our brothers, our friends are with us now. I would like to thank every Donbass citizen. You are heroes.
Meanwhile, NATO countries have dismissed the votes as a sham. They say they are illegal under Ukrainian and international law. I put this question to Denis Pushilin moments after the result was made official.
Ukraine and NATO countries call this referendum illegitimate, and Russia is the only country so far to to say that this referendum is legitimate, what do you have to say to those critics?
You know, once there was a time when Western countries didn't recognize the USSR. Our way is defined. The Western point of view was expected. Of course, we'll take into account their opinion, but we'll now act following the interests of our mother Russia.
Regardless of whether the West sees these referendums as legitimate or not, in the coming days, Russia will announce that these regions are now part of the Russian Federation, ushering in a new stage in the Russia-Ukraine war. Johnny Miller, Donetsk.
The World Bank, in its latest report on Afghanistan, has said that global food and energy prices continue to put pressure on basic household prices in the crisis-stricken country. At the same time, rising inflation and slow recovery in nominal wages have decreased the people's ability to buy basic goods.
Today, we witness people have lesser purchasing power. Previously, a middle-class household used to pay nearly $200 to buy multiple goods, but today they only ask for very basic necessities like oil and flour. You know, the prices are increasing. In addition, the banking crisis and sanctions have affected the prices and business in the market.
The World Bank report has confirmed that since June 2022, Afghanistan's currency has depreciated slightly against the U.S. dollar, while the prices of basic food and fuel items continue the upward trend. Abdullah Rizayi, who has been working as a shoemaker for almost half of his life, says he had never experienced such economic conditions before.
In the past years, I used to make sufficient income from this job. Currently, I'm not only receiving fewer customers, but the money that I earn has lost its value. I used to make 300 Afghanis per day, but nowadays I hardly can make 50, which is the price of 5 loaves of bread. Sometimes I feel ashamed when I look at my children.
In the meantime, widespread joblessness is leaving many Afghan families without a solution to make ends meet.
We have had a job once or twice a week in the spring and summer. I wonder why we should do it in the winter when there is no job to do. People are struggling with hunger and difficulties. Some have their own houses, but they should pay for the house rent too. This year, I fell short of paying the bills, and now I am in debt.
This comes as the World Food Program has warned that Afghanistan is facing its most serious risk of famine in 20 years. The UN body has asked for $1.1 billion life-saving assistance for 18 million people across Afghanistan. The ripple effects of the US sanctions and freezing of billions of dollars in Afghans' assets are pushing up inflation in Afghanistan. People here are calling for the release of assets and more international funding to the country. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Polls show that a divided Congress appears all but assured 6 weeks before the federal legislative vote in the United States, which would also ensure continued political division and stagnation. The Democrat-led inquiry over protests which alleged election fraud in 2020 continue to plod on, but polls show they have had essentially no effect on changing voters' opinions. While longtime Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi looks certain to be forced out of power in November, the top level of Republican leadership looks likely to add more so-called Trumpists, reflecting the enduring influence of ex-President Donald Trump. The biggest unofficial political party in the United States is actually the self-declared independent voter. Polls indicate that a huge swing of 12% has taken place within this king-making group. In 2020, post-election polls found that they favored Democrats by 7%, but independents are now tilting towards Republicans by 5%.
Not happy with the way things are, obviously. We're all worried about inflation and it's impacting our, you know, wallets. I wish there were more parties besides Republicans and Democrats, because it's just, you know, party interests, and people like you and me are just left behind. We have to live our lives, and politicians aren't really thinking about us.
Pollsters say the Democratic Party seems certain to lose control of the lower house of parliament, if not both houses. As the election nears, many expect the ongoing inflation and economic growth disasters caused by blowback from Western sanctions on Russia to play a larger and larger role in voters' decisions. A recent survey by Forbes found that 30% of Americans are drawing from their savings more than usual, which is the highest percentage in the survey's history. Another analysis found that the average American has lost over $4,000 in income since Joe Biden took office due to the increases in the inflation and interest rates. The midterms are on track to be the most expensive vote ever, reaching $10 billion by Election Day. Many say that's a reminder of the enormous role played in American democracy by money and advertising. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
The crisis hit Lebanon is once again a scene of angry masses. The parliament is back to meet and debate a new budget. Yet protesters see the budget being discussed as elusive.
Instead of putting together a budget which encourages development in agriculture, industrial production, and oil fields in Lebanon, they want to impoverish the people and push them to die in the sea as they immigrate illegally. The government, which relies on debt, is being controlled by a mob, which is the Banks Association and the Central Bank. They should be held accountable for getting billions of dollars out of the country.
Banks reopened partially on Monday following a week-long closure in the wake of a wave of holdups. Depositors stormed at least 7 bank branches in the capital and abroad demanding their trapped savings.
We know these banks, you know, where we invested our money. But unfortunately, they stole the money between themselves, and they plan, and every time they create a story.
One woman named Saleh Hafiz forced one branch to give her $13,000 of her savings, saying she needed it to pay for her sister's medical treatment. But she didn't take back her money on her own.
They left us no other choice. We encouraged Saleh, and we were with her when she held up the bank, because it was a humanitarian situation, and we will be with all the people who urgently need their money. Our government is rotten and corrupt, and so is the judicial system.
A former member of parliament tells Press TV that the government has been procrastinating while time is running out. The governmental institutions, including schools, are almost out of service.
The entire governmental sector is paralyzed. The workers, the military personnel, the ministerial workers, the public teachers, they all have rights and they can barely do their job. There's no health care, no educational assistance. The budget plan the parliament is debating today is unfair.
Lebanon's economic downfall began in October 2019. The Lebanese pound has lost around 90% of its value against the U.S. dollar, but officials have failed to put in place necessary reforms. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
This is IRIB English Radio. Website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrors fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from Thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for Thee. I ask Thee concerning the complaints of Thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among Thy servants, of a handmaid from among Thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask Thee, O He who owns all objects of need, which are granted by His will and hastened to His desire, that Thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that Thou willest, and givest me mercy from Thee. Forgiveness decreases Thee not, and giving injuries Thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from Thee: the facility to obey Thee at its beginning, and the favor of Thy forgiveness at its end. O He who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The UK Prime Minister has not been in office for more than a month, yet she has sent the UK economy in a tailspin.
First, her announcement of a new tax plan, but it was blasted to benefit the rich more than the poor. And it was then reported that the UK markets lost £500 billion since Liz Truss took over. And then the British pound sunk once again against the dollar as the UK dived deeper into a recession. What is going on with the UK's economy? And is it all the fault of the new UK Prime Minister? That is what we'll be asking our guests in this edition of the program. Our guests joining us for this program are journalist and commentator James Tweedy, who joins us from Plymouth. Also joining us is political and economic analyst Shabir Rizvi, who joins us from London.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to you both. James Tweedy, I have this semi-technical question to maybe ask you, but I figured I'd just come out with a really, really simple question. What is going on with UK's economy under Truss?
Thanks for having me. There's a problem with the economy, and it predates Liz Truss becoming Prime Minister, and that's the problem, as they call it, the cost of living crisis, which in other words is inflation. Inflation is running at about 10% now, and may rise still. And that's been caused by the rising prices of natural gas and oil, which is driven by the sanctions on Russia over the, you know, its military operation in Ukraine. So, you know, this is, I mean, Truss bears responsibility for that because she was Foreign Secretary at the time that, you know, the time of the operation started, and she was always one of the leading voices for support for Ukraine and sanctions on Russia. And the Conservative Party knew, I mean, everyone knew that that's what she stood for when she was running for leadership of the Conservative Party and to become the new Prime Minister. Whereas her main opponent, Rishi Sunak, it was less certain, but there were people who hoped that he would take a more pragmatic view and ease off on the sanctions. But it's all become kind of irrelevant now because somebody, possibly across the Atlantic, has sabotaged the Nord Stream 1 and 2 pipelines that carry gas from Russia to Germany and other places in Northern Europe. So okay. We're very deep in the crisis now, and it's hard to see how we're going to get out.
Sure. And quickly, if you were to give a percentage fault to Truss for the state of the UK economy now, how much of a percentage would you attribute to her?
Okay. I mean, the question is whether the budget, the mini budget on Friday caused this. Well, you have the same, you know, the euro currency suffered the same slump in value against the dollar, as did the yen, the Japanese yen, the Australian dollar, and the Canadian dollar. And the difference is that the USA has energy security and Europe doesn't, you see. So I don't think it's to do with that. There's a problem with mortgage lenders have started changing all the mortgage products, you know, the mortgages that they offer. They've withdrawn lots of them.
Okay.
Yeah, that's because they offered a lot of fixed rate mortgages, and they don't want to do that anymore because inflation is so high, and this predates the budget, that the Bank of England is going to keep putting up interest rates. So, you know, of course, everybody is going to want to have their mortgage rate fixed for 2 or 3 or 5 years like they used to be able to, but the mortgage companies, you know, they're like casinos. you know, the House always wins, right? You know, they set it up so the House always wins. Well, they don't want to lose out on that. They're going to pull those products.
Sure.
They pulled a lot of one where you pay like say £1,000 in advance and you get a slightly lower interest rate. So you're paying your interest up front. But,
okay.
You know, that's based on a certain interest rate, and if the interest rate is going to go up, then, you know, the bank or the mortgage lender loses out. So I don't think it's to do with that budget. You know, the big thing is that the government is spending, it's going to borrow about $60 billion, they say, to pay for, to keep people's household bills down.
Okay.
In other words, to subsidize people's gas and electricity bills. So that's increasing government borrowing. And then there was a run on government debt bonds, you know.
Very well.
Like government bonds.
Sure. Let's bring in Shabir Rizvi in here to get a little bit clearer, Shabir Rizvi, about, or maybe you can tell us why this proposed tax cuts, which... First of all, depending on what publication you're reading, but it seems to be unanimous that it's going to benefit the rich more than the poor, why it has caused this domino effect in different sectors, not different sectors, in different factors that have pulled the UK economy into doldrums, as it's been reported. Perhaps you can explain it to us in layman's terms, of course.
Hello, good evening, Kaveh. It's really interesting times to be commenting as to what's happening to the UK economy. My day job is as a financial advisor, advising clients how to borrow money, how to invest their income, and so on. And it has been really quite a shocking week. It really comes after Mrs. Truss defended her vision for the economy, which has spooked markets and shocked most economists, mainstream economists. So, you know, everyone is really quite intrigued as to the policies that have been implemented. And then, of course, this week saw, yes, there are factors that other currencies have also fallen against the dollar. But this week, the pound has the lowest value ever against the dollar. Dollar which was invested 250 years ago. And the Bank of England are so alarmed that they poured billions into the market. Why they did that? Because a lot of money, pension funds are invested in it, and they didn't want the pension funds to collapse. Interest on government borrowing goes from almost 0% to 5% in weeks. The IMF is also spooked. The Chancellor dare not publish the report of the independent experts. It's expected to be published sometime in October now, and he was sort of pushing it forward for end of November. And what we are told, the mantra we are told, is that don't worry, say both Truss and Kutang, an age of prosperity is just down the road. We've been living for the last 12 years in the age of austerity, where the rich have been getting richer and the poor have been getting poorer. And really, you know, it's really extraordinary, you know, for the last 40 years, the neoliberal economist mantra has been to say that trickle-down economics, meaning that make the rich richer, therefore some money will trickle down to the poor. This is what I like to sort of dub as voodoo-nomics, not Reaganomics, not Thatcher-nomics, not Trussonomics. It's pure voodoo-nomics. There is no fundamental basis that by reducing 5% tax on the wealthiest would sort of somehow make the poorer better off. It's absolutely sort of outrageous. It has no basis in conventional economic thinking. It's an economy based on ideology.
Well, that's
the Tory party, as I said, has made rich richer in the last 12 years, and they want to continue to do so for the next 2.5 years, 2 years that they're in power.
Well, James Sweeney, that's pretty much what our guest there, Shabir Rizvi, has said, is what many economists agree, and that is that trickle-down economics doesn't work. Of course, it depends on who you're talking to. At the same time, we know that Liz Truss has said this is not going to make me a popular prime minister, but I'm going to go with it anyways. And she has actually embarked on this and is not going to shy away from it. If she knows that it's not going to work, based on what it has, what economists have said, or other analysts have said, she's very steadfast in going through with it. What do you think the reason for that is, knowing that many have said trickle-down economics doesn't work?
Well, conventional economics, as taught in the West, is voodoo, that's for sure. But it's very strange to see the same people who said that trickle-down economics really does work, you know, laissez-faire economics is great for decades, and now saying it doesn't, you know, the same people. And, you know, the Tories have argued, and they can back this up, that cutting corporation tax actually increases tax revenue because you get more investment. Now, whether that's going to keep working, because it has in the past, but whether that's going to keep working in the current crisis, which is not, you know, which is caused by an external factor, then I don't know. You see, you can't tell.
There might be an external factor. We're going to get into that, and I'm going to ask both of you whether that's the case.
I'm going to say, look, in Marxist economics, you need a capitalist to employ people. That's what creates jobs. You need capitalists, bigger capitalists, more capitalists. So yeah, it kind of works. But you know, what's going on is that, you know, again, all the economists said the free market was sacred, and now we have this immense distortion of the market, of the free market, by putting embargoes and sanctions on Russian oil imports, and now blowing up the pipelines, the oil and gas imports, and now blowing up the gas pipelines. You see, so that has, and of course, that distortion has created an economic crisis because the price of gas has gone up like tenfold in 2 years. So you know, there's all sorts of things going on here. Look, what's going to happen? She's going to be unpopular because a lot of the things that were in that budget would be popular with the people who vote Conservative. They're reducing taxes, including on the basic rate of tax for people that most people claim, right? They increase the threshold where you pay stamp duty, which is a tax on buying a house. Many more people will be exempt from that because the threshold is now $500,000. And all these things, that was all sort of bread and butter stuff. But now what you're going to have, apparently there's a fear that the house price, the house market, the prices of houses will crash. So people who own house, they don't own them, they're paying mortgages, but you know, people with property, the value of their property will fall and they will be unhappy about
The
thing is that the house market here is ridiculously overheated to the extent everything is overpriced, people can't afford to buy.
Okay.
It needs to come down. And half of the properties on the market you see now, they're being sold at auction, which means that the only people who can buy them are big-time landlords who've got that much money in the bank to pay when the auction is over.
Let's move to that external factor that I'd like to ask Shabir Rizvi here, that maybe a reason, and a very good reason for Liz Truss to Shabir Rizvi to have introduced this tax cut plan. When she was running to become the prime minister, she during one of the sessions that she was presenting herself to the Friends of Israel, obviously displaying how much she supports Israel in so many ways, but said that the trade deal with Israel needs to be revamped. And she was very quick when she came into office to go ahead with that and finalize that, at the same time making the announcement that she's going to have UK's embassy possibly move from Tel Aviv to Al-Quds. Now, it's very interesting that would be at the top of her list, the trade treaty to be revamped. Do you think that she's made promises to Israel, as an example, that you're going to get tax cuts, come and invest in the UK, and let's revamp the treaty that we had before? So she has to follow through with these tax cuts for the corporations, for example?
Well, look, you know, the Israel angle is interesting, but I think it's very clear, if you look at it, wherever Israel is participating in economic activity, they really don't invest that much. They want more money to come into Israel for investment, whether it's technology from the the Silicon Valley in the USA, or whether it's Indian investment into armament and biotechnology and other areas. So I don't know what benefit that would derive to the UK. But at a broader level, the mantra that is being sort of fed to the public here in UK, as you know very well, is that it's due to Putin that the oil prices has gone up. It's due to Putin that we have high inflation. Food security is being sort of put on the special operation in Ukraine. So everything that is happening to the British economy, the Tory government does not want to take and be honest, saying that they have inflicted austerity for the last 12 years on the British public. And this is an aspect of that austerity, so that the poorer become poorer, and is being sold to the public that, you know, tax is being reduced and so on. You know, 1% reduction in what is called national insurance tax here on, say, someone average salary earning here, 25, 30, 40,000 pounds. That's only £400 per year, that 1%. While the top 1%, 700,000 people in the UK who would benefit by the 5% reduction in income tax, if someone is £100,000 a year, that's £50,000 extra in their pocket. So again, as I said earlier, the whole concept that if you make rich even richer by way of other instruments, whether it's the reduction in personal taxation, corporation taxation, and other aspects, will make the wider society cheaper. But if I may just continue for 1 minute, that, you know, the policy that's being portrayed by Truss and her team and Mr. Kwasi Kwarteng is to make Britain less regulated. But dare I say that for the last 40 years, probably Britain is the most deregulated country in Europe at this moment. I don't know how far deregulation will go. Does it mean that a serfdom would come back into the UK like it was in Victorian times? Is that kind of a unregulated market that the Tories want to have in the UK? Right. And, you know, ideas are being touted that they want London to be the Singapore on the Thames, unregulated, you know, for the wealthy and the rich, and absolutely regulated for the poor and the disenfranchised.
Sure. Well, I'm not too sure if that's going to work for the UK there, James Tweedy, when you have even the International Monetary Fund coming out. And this was surprising when the IMF comes out and makes a statement saying that what fiscal measures Britain is adopting is actually going to increase inequality, urging UK authorities to reconsider providing more targeted support instead to affected families and businesses. Now, why would the IMF making that statement? The First of all, wasn't there inequality in the UK before anyways?
The IMF is responsible for, you know, the continuation of colonial and post-colonial inequalities in the world, so they should know about inequality. It's actually baffling why they're saying that, why the White House is saying that, why the White House is even talking about it. Like it's their business, you know. I've never heard the U.S. government interfering in Britain's economic affairs before. I think, you know, like I say, it all comes back to inflation and the sanctions on Russia. That's not going to change. And yesterday, the shadow defense minister, Labour Party MP for Healey, said that the government will change. He's very sure of that. I'm not so sure. But and the Labour Party will be in power, but the policy towards Ukraine will not change. And he said that anyone who says stop the war is playing into Vladimir Putin's hands. So he's just as militant against Russia and for this war in the Ukraine, as Liz Truss is, and so is the Labour Party, you see. So nothing is going to change. In fact, none of the parties in Parliament are proposing a different policy. So the crisis is going to continue. We have this, both the main parties are talking about sort of moving the deck chairs around on the Titanic in order to try and deal with the problem of gas and therefore electricity prices, oil and therefore electricity prices and every other kind of price going through the roof. The conservative way is going to be to borrow money to give to people to pay their bills, but those people will have to pay that money in the end, in the future, through taxation as that debt uh-huh. paid off, probably after the next election. The Labour policy is to put a windfall tax, as they call it, on companies like BP, British Petroleum, that produce the actual gas and oil, and are making much bigger profits because of the global market price being very high now. But then they'll pay that money straight back to those companies
sure.
as a subsidy for people's bills, you see. So those companies will make the same profit twice, and they'll
okay.
continue to make that profit.
We got 30 seconds left, so I'm going to jump in, I'm sorry, to and ask Shabir Rizvi the question. Shabir Rizvi, I was trying to look at the ways, different ways that the UK is spending money. £500 billion, I believe, is what's going to go for the energy issue. You were looking at another £500 million for the Ukraine war. These are just recent acts. And there was another $500 million. I don't know why this $500 is a figure that is repeated, where the UK has promised in another area, which I'm not coming up with that figure right now. But these are big chunks of money. Where is this money coming from that Liz Truss believes that it can just invest in different areas or to allocate in different areas when the economy is doing as bad as it is right now? 30 seconds only.
Well, famously, Theresa May said that we don't have money tree. But the reality is that the government sort of plants new money tree as and when required for their purpose. But when it's sort of, for the National Health Service, for the improvement of the education sector, where students don't okay. have to pay fees for their university degrees.
Thank you.
There's no money available.
I thank you for that, Shabir Rizvi. I do apologize for jumping in. Political and economic analyst there from London. Thank you, Shabir. Also, journalist and commentator James Sweetie from Plymouth, UK. Thank you so much. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. For me, Kavitawe and the team, it's goodbye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
Physicians for Human Rights have recently announced that, according to its calculations, the number of children denied treatment outside Gaza had nearly doubled. This number includes children younger than one. Please stay with us for an article in this regard written by Fedah Al-Ghidra journalist. This article is published under the heading, Spike in Children Denied Medical Treatment by Zionist Regime's Military. Here's more. His health is deteriorating daily. Now, Saeed Dargun, 14, can't walk. Saeed from the city of Khan Yunis in the southern Gaza Strip has a cancerous tumor in his right leg. His condition is worsening because the Zionist regime occupation authorities are preventing him from traveling to the occupied territories for treatment. He is not the only one. Physicians for Human Rights has recently announced that, according to its calculations, the number of children denied treatment outside Gaza had nearly doubled. This number includes children younger than one. In September last year, Saeed underwent tests and PET and CT scans in an Egyptian hospital, after which doctors decided to transfer him to the occupied territories. The tumor in his right leg, which was first diagnosed in 2016, requires advanced medical treatment that is not available in Palestinian hospitals. Nahla, 28, Saeed's sister, told the Electronic Intifada that while Saeed was granted an all-hospitals appointment issued by both Zionist regime hospitals and those in the occupied West Bank, the delay in getting a travel permit to leave Gaza means that has now expired. We live in fear of his health. It's hard to see someone suffer all the time and you can't help him, Nahla said, adding, we just want to know the reason for rejection. As for Saeed, he's getting bored. I just hope to get treatment quickly so that I can walk and play with my friends, the teenager said, adding, I get bored sitting at home all the time, especially since there is no electricity or any means of entertainment in Gaza. Due to the Zionist regime restrictions on the import of fuel, Gaza suffers frequent electricity cuts. Saeed is not the only child who is awaiting the Zionist regime's approval to travel for treatment, whether to the occupied territories or to the West Bank. Physicians for Human Rights recently found that the number of children denied treatment had nearly doubled. According to the organization, in 2020, 17% of children's requests to leave the Gaza Strip for the purpose of receiving medical care not available in the Gaza Strip were delayed or refused. In the first 6 months of 2021, this rate had nearly doubled to 32%, according to calculations made by Physicians for Human Rights. According to the World Health Organization, more than 155 out of a total of 481 Palestinians under the age of 18 seeking to cross the Erez checkpoint for treatment in July this year were either refused or delayed. Among 0 to 3-year-olds, 30 children of 136 were rejected or delayed in seeking treatment. Such obstructions can prove fatal. Three children have died so far this year after permits to leave Gaza for medical treatment were denied or delayed, the human rights group Al-Mizan has reported. Enshera Madani, 16, who has a malignant brain tumor, is also waiting for the Zionist regime permission to travel for treatment. And Sharah's mother told the Electronic Intifada that the delay in her daughter's treatment caused her to lose one eye as a result of the growth of the tumor. For years, the Zionist regime has been delaying, the mother said. I'm in so much pain while my daughter is slowly dying, and I can do nothing for her, she said. Abdurrahman Abu Mustafa is less than a year old. He has lived with heart disease since he was born but needs open heart surgery, not available in the Gaza Strip. Gaza's health sector is in serious disarray as a direct result of the Zionist regime's 15-year blockade and its tight restrictions on people and goods entering and leaving the coastal strip of land. There is a chronic shortage of essential medicines and import bans block vital equipment. Gaza's health ministry, for example, has been unable to import medical devices and parts for radiology and imaging services such as CT, PET and X-ray scanning machines. In 2021, the West Bank Palestinian Authority submitted 120 requests for the entry of such equipment, of which only 30 or 25% were approved by February 2022. Receiving exit permits for medical treatment is therefore critical in Gaza, and time is out of the essence. Ahmad Abu Mustafa, Abdurrahman's father, said that his son needs urgent attention. Among the problems that Abdurrahman faces are a severe lack of oxygen. Ahmad said, I submitted many requests for the permit but to no avail. I don't know the reason for the delay. I just received a mobile message that the request is under consideration. The Zionist regime often also refuses to allow a minor's parents to accompany them. According to Physicians for Human Rights, in 2021, those rejections reached 35% in 2021. Abdurrahman's parents did not even try to get permits for themselves, and should Abdurrahman be granted an exit permit, he will be accompanied by his grandmother. The head of the International Commission to Support the Rights of the Palestinian People, Salah Abdul Atti, told the Electronic Intifada that the Zionist regime rejects most requests to obtain permits for treatment outside Gaza. The permit regime amounts to torture for Gaza patients. Atti told the Electronic Intifada, especially children for whom anguish about whether they can get treatment is simply added to the physical pain itself. It is also a grave violation of international humanitarian law, specifically the Geneva Conventions, which stipulate a right to medical care, Atti said. He called for serious and effective international intervention to end the siege and put real pressure on the fabricated regime of Israel to ease the suffering of 2 million Palestinians in Gaza.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.